WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The most recent time Terry Gross spoke with German film director Werner Herzog was in 2011, the year after he made the documentary Cave of Forgotten Dreams, which is not in the Blu-ray box set, but is available separately on DVD and Blu-ray, including a 3D Blu-ray edition. It's about the Chauvet Cave in France that has cave paintings which are 30,000 years old. The cave had been sealed off by falling rock for over 20,000 years before French scientists discovered it in 1994.
I was amazed at how some of the images were shaded in and there was a certain amount of depth implied in how they were shaded. I was expecting when I walked into your film to see amazing line drawings and stick figures, you know, and it's so much more sophisticated than that.
Well, I think art as it bursts on the scene 32,000 years ago is fully accomplished. It doesn't start with, I say it in quotes, primitive scribblings and first attempts like children would make drawings. The whole ensemble of the cave and all the paintings is awesome. So it's very hard to single out one specific part of it, but for me, the most intense of all is the so-called panel of lions. You see lions, five, six, seven of them stalking something, their eyes with incredible intensity pointed, all exactly pointed at one object, and you don't know what they are stalking. So it's really very, very beautiful, very intense, very accomplished.
No, the Chauvet Cave where you filmed wasn't discovered until 1994. Tell us some of the things that the keepers of the cave have been doing to keep it as untouched, as pristine as possible.
When they discovered the cave, they did everything right to preserve it. They immediately understood the importance of the cave. They would only very carefully move along the floor by spreading out sheets of plastic and step on it, because you could immediately see that there were fairly fresh tracks of cave bears. The cave bear actually went extinct 20,000 or so years ago, but there are still fresh tracks of them. And of course, later, when scientists moved in, they did it with utmost caution, never touching anything. A metal walkway was built, and you never leave this walkway.
So once you decided you wanted to make this film about the Chauvet Cave, how did you get permission to go inside with a film crew and shoot it, considering how hard they've been working at the cave to keep people out of it so that the cave can be maintained?
Yes, of course, it was the biggest of all battles. I had to approach the Ministry of Culture, but there's also the regional government which has to give its okay. And, of course, the scientists, the Council of the Scientists. And I was very lucky that the French Minister of Culture, Frédéric Mitterrand, he's a nephew of the former president, Frédéric Mitterrand turned out to be a great fan of my films. But French can be very territorial when it comes to their own patrimonie, their patrimony, their legacy in art, in culture. And of course, me as a Bavarian filmmaker, why am I going to do this and not a French one?
Well, what about the regional government and the scientists? Did they know your movies and were they open to the idea of you doing the film?
Well, they had to be convinced, and I had to explain myself how I would do it technically. Of course, the restrictions were enormous. I was only allowed 4 hours a day for a week. I was only allowed 3 men with me. I was only allowed to carry along what we could carry in our hands, so we couldn't move heavy equipment in there and install it. Lights that would only emit light without any temperature. Of course, all the restrictions. You never step off the metal walkway. This is why the crew sometimes could not hide away. You cannot just step behind the camera and hide, because you would step on the floor of the cave. And, of course, 3D cameras are fairly clumsy, and of course we were not allowed to have support from outside. You see, the climate in the cave is so delicate. They open the steel door for entering, and they open it for getting us out. But if we had forgotten something, yes, we would open the door again, but that would have meant the end of the day of shooting.
And you mentioned it's this kind of crystal landscape. Everything is covered in this calcified crystal. What does that come from?
Seeping water that actually leaves layers or creates formations of stalactites and stalagmites. What is also significant, it is so fresh. It is so as if it had been left yesterday. Things are so fresh, and all of a sudden you see a painting of a cave bear, a charcoal painting, and about half an inch layer of calcite over it, which takes thousands of years to form. So you know this is not a forgery. That was actually the first indication. This is not a forgery. This is for real. And of course, through radiocarbon dating, you can establish fairly precisely when was the painting done. There are swipe marks of torches. You see, when a torch burns down, and in order to rekindle it, it's like cutting the wick of a candle, you swipe the torch against the wall, and little fragments of charcoal were analyzed through radiocarbon dating, and we know pretty precisely when somebody swiped this torch, something, let's say, 28,400 years ago.
Now, there's a scene in your documentary about the cave in which you're talking about the possibility, with all the torches inside, that our ancestors would have been able to see their shadows and see shadows on the wall.
Most certainly, yes.
Yes, and that leads you to think about shadow dancing, and that leads you to think about Fred Astaire in the shadow dancing scene, and then you show the Fred Astaire.
I couldn't help it.
You couldn't
I
help
could
it.
Not help it.
No, I have to stop you here. Wait. I actually met you a few years ago at a reception after you, after a screening of your films at the University of Pennsylvania. And you were talking about how you had been watching Fred Astaire films. So I thought, okay, I see how Fred Astaire ended up in this documentary about a 30,000-year-old cave, because you were watching Fred Astaire films. Go ahead.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, it is for me certainly the greatest single sequence in all of film history. Fred Astaire dancing with his own shadows, and all of a sudden he stops and the shadows become independent and dance without him, and he has to catch up with them. I mean, it's just so quintessential movie. It can't get more beautiful. It's actually from Swing Time. And when you look at the cave, and there are certain panels, there's evidence of some fires on the ground. They were not for cooking. They were, because there's no evidence of any habitation in there, they were used for illumination. You have to step in front of these fires to look at the images. And of course, when you move, you must see your own shadow. And immediately, Fred Astaire comes to mind, who did something 32,000 years later, which is essentially what we can imagine for early Paleolithic people.
Now, the question comes up, what's the difference between a Werner Herzog documentary about a cave and anybody else's, you know, National Geographic documentary about a cave? And I think you just answered that in a way, that your imagination is seeing all these connections. Suddenly Fred Astaire is shadow dancing in your movie. And, you know, you're talking, you know, in your narration, not just about the fact, but about things it makes you think about.
Yes, and our imagination and our entire approach as human beings. How do we enter a cave like this? How do we experience it? How does it surpass our wildest dreams? All this, I think, you would not see in a National Geographic documentary.
As wonderful as those National Geographic documentaries are.
Mine are better. Sorry for saying that. I say it only in quotes.
Okay.
My apologies, National Geographic. Accept my apologies. But I think my films are different. And I think the way I shot and present Cave of Forgotten Dreams is different, and it's a position which moves away from what you normally expect from a documentary.
I'll just say I'm glad that your films and National Geographic films exist. And
all right, let's accept it like that. There's cohabitation.
Cohabitation, exactly.
Yes.
So when I was watching your cave documentary, and there were references to cave bears that existed then and are now long extinct, I couldn't help but think of the documentary that you made, Grizzly Man, which is such a terrific film. And it's a documentary about Timothy Treadwell, this guy who went to the wild to film grizzly bears and saw himself as like the friend of the grizzlies, but it was not an environment that a human belonged in. And eventually he was eaten. He and his girlfriend were eaten by a bear. And he actually got that on audio tape, and the audio tape survived their deaths. So thinking about when you were in the cave and thinking about all the cave bears that used to be in there, did you think about Grizzly Man?
I always think in a way about Grizzly Man. Whenever I step out into nature or wild nature, I immediately have Timothy Treadwell present. And of course, he marks a position which, of course, was a tragic misunderstanding of wild nature. He romanticized it, and he saw it as if the bears were all like in Walt Disney movies, friendly, fluffy creatures. Of course, they are ferocious, and they ultimately eat you, and they kill you. Treadwell is always present in my life. I can't just discard this incredible man, this wonderful man in a movie. He's always around somehow.
You seem to really be attracted to, I know I'm stating the obvious here, to extreme personalities and extreme environments. In terms of personalities, you have Timothy Treadwell from Grizzly Man, the character of Aguirre and Aguirre, the Wrath of God. Then, of course, you're attracted to extreme environments. You did a documentary about this recently discovered cave that's 30,000 years old. You did a documentary about discoveries in Antarctica. Do you consider yourself to be an extreme personality?
Difficult question. No, I don't think so. I'm a professional. I'm a filmmaker. What you are trying to combine makes a lot of sense. Many people tell me, you have been everywhere. You have shot in the Amazon, in the Sahara Desert, in Antarctica even. That would be horizontally spreading out, but I've always tried to look deep into the human condition. This is why I do a film on Timothy Treadwell. This is why I film Aguirre, The Wrath of God, and other films. So it's always a look deep into the abyss, into the deepest recesses of the human soul, or as far as you can scrutinize with a camera. And it's maybe significant at the moment I'm doing a film on death row inmates, and I thought about a title, and I came up with Gazing into the Abyss. And then the name of a person on death row, like Joseph Garcia on death row, Michael Perry on death row, Linda Carty on death row, but all under the umbrella title, Gazing into the Abyss. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, well, that would have been a great title for the cave film. It would have been a great title for Timothy Treadwell. It would have been a great title for Aguirre, the Wrath of God, as if I was more somebody who was vertically looking as deep as it gets.
Werner Herzog speaking to Terry Gross in 2011. A new 16-disc Blu-ray collection of his films has recently been released by Shout Factory.